Oxford professor John Lennox wrote a book called Against the Flow. And he says in this book that when God calls us to do something difficult, he gives us the strength when we need it, not before we need it. And he illustrates this principle with a story. He had an encounter with a Russian follower of Jesus who spent years in a Siberian labor camp for the crime of teaching his children about the Bible. So Lennox tells the story this way. He says, the man described to me that he had seen things that no man should ever have to see. I listened, thinking how little I really knew about life and wondering how I would have fared under his circumstances. As if he read my thoughts, he suddenly said, you couldn't cope with that, could you? I was embarrassed and I stumbled out something like, well, no, I'm sure you are quite right about that. And then he grinned and said, nor could I. I was a man who fainted at the sight of his own blood, let alone that of others. But what I discovered in the camp was this. God does not help us face theoretical situations, but real ones. Like you, I couldn't imagine how one could cope in the gulag. But once I was there, I found that God met me. God met me exactly as Jesus had promised his disciples when he was preparing them for persecution. And so Lennox goes on to say that we can be confident then that the Lord will give us a sufficient amount of grace to handle whatever comes our way, whenever it comes our way, and not necessarily a moment before that. Now, we're people who like to have things done ahead of time. We buy insurance for ahead of time. We're willing to pay money to get a situation under control before it happens. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we wish God was like that too, but he just doesn't do that. He promises, I'll be there when you need me. But how will I be on my day of trouble? How will I impress the Lord? Will I just be a brave soul? Will I just charge into whatever it is that's come upon me? Will I have bravery in the face of danger? I won't let you down, Lord. How many of you have ever let down the Lord? I think most of us probably have experienced that. So what is it he's asking of us? Luke tells us in these two stories what it is and what it was that impressed Jesus the most with people who were in very dire situations, who were in trouble. Now, this all happened, it says, in Capernaum, which is up on the north side of the Lake of Galilee, and this is the town where Jesus lived. We've heard about this in this previous scripture that we've been reading. This is the end of a series that we've entitled Change, How Jesus Brings Change into My Life Because He Wants to Change the World. And we've been watching how he does that. And a lot of the changes he did, a lot of the things he did, was right here in Capernaum. He was raised in Nazareth, but he moved to Capernaum. And it's probably, might well be, his house where he was teaching, and they took the plates off of the, or however they did it, they dug down through the roof to lower the guy who was paralyzed. I hope they fixed his roof. It was there that Matthew had his tax collection booth, and Jesus said to him, follow me. It was there where this synagogue is. To this day. Now, this synagogue is still in Capernaum. This was built in 300 AD, about 300 years after the one that they said in this text that the centurion built for us, and it's built on the foundations of that old one. And it was built, they said, he helped them build that, and that's kind of an amazing thing. It's also, this town, the home of Peter and Andrew, two of his disciples, and who were brothers, who were in the fishing business together. This is also the place where Jesus gave his bread of life discourse after he had been on the other side of the lake the day before, fed thousands of people, and left them and came across the lake with his disciples. They took a boat, he walked, and he met them out there. And the next day, the crowd came around the lake and found him, and he said to them, "Oh, I know what you're about. You just came for breakfast." And so he gave them this discourse and told them who the bread of life was at this place, Capernaum. And we have in the historical record that there were followers of Jesus. There were Jewish followers of Jesus, Messianic Jews, up until 400 AD. There were nuns there the late 300s who were in that place and who recorded meeting these people here. And then in the 600s, it was overrun by Muslims and abandoned for over a millennium, rediscovered, purchased, and excavated by the Franciscans in the 1800s. And the distinctive thing, if you're in Israel, about places that the Catholic Church has developed, or the whichever order, is that they charge you for using the bathroom there. So that's the distinction. So, but Jesus, here at this with this centurion and with this woman at Nain, he meets the need of the moment. He doesn't come beforehand to get ready for the bad thing to happen. It just happens. And when he does something, when he meets the need, it changes the world. We're still talking about it all this time later. It was that great. And so Jesus will meet you where your faith is. Now, I'm not saying by that if you get more faith, he will be closer to you. It's different than that. The question is what will you bring? You know, what will you bring to Jesus, and what is he asking you to bring on the day of trouble? The first thing is this: bring your trust. Trust is another word for faith. Do you trust God or not? And how do you trust him? What do you trust him for? Bring your trust. How big is your faith? Jesus says if your faith is as small as a mustard seed, which is the smallest seed they could sort of think of, it's enough. Bring that to Jesus, and he can work with that. But the centurion had a different kind of faith. He had this must be God doing this faith. And if you can see what Jesus is about and say to yourself, this is God. I know what's going on here. If you can throw yourself into his arms and trust him at that level, then he is ready to meet you there. You'll impress him with that. Other people try lots of things to impress the Lord. They try being very religious, try being as good as they can be, and it's never what he's asking of us. He's asking first and foremost that we trust him. Believe in the Lord. And this centurion amazed Jesus. Jesus is very hard to amaze. God is no respecter of men, the scripture says. He's just not that impressed with us. He knows us too well. He loves us, but to impress him, that's something. And so this man does it. And it's a strange story in a way, because a centurion, as a centurion there in Capernaum, he would have been probably a pretty wealthy man. They tended to stay in one place for a long, long time. He was a very influential man. A centurion would have been responsible for 80 soldiers, and a Roman legion would have had 60 centurions with their 80 soldiers each, and they were sort of the core chunk or the core piece of the Roman armies. They are the guys that made it work, and so they paid them well, and they expected a lot out of them at the same time. Now, we see in Jerusalem, in the stories there, that there was a lot of hostility between the Romans and the Jews. And indeed there was, and there would be in a place like this as well. So there was sort of a built-in bias. This guy's a foreigner, he's not Jewish, he's wealthy, and so if I just knew that about him, I would hate his guts just for no other reason, and for good reason. But this man has gone out of his way to be a friend to them. If the local Jewish leaders are asking a favor of Jesus on his behalf, he must be somebody very special. And what strikes me about this passage is Jesus' response to it. Verse 6. What did he do? He just went. So he went. And that got me thinking, is that my response when there's a need? I'm a very busy guy, and you're very busy people. Jesus just doesn't seem to be all that busy. He's busy, he's doing stuff, but when there's a need, he just goes. So he went. I found this very convicting. How important do I think I am? How important do I think I am? So am I on the agenda going to the next thing? Jesus wasn't just going to the next thing. Am I going to the next thing, or am I going to the right thing? That's important. In our everyday life, we got schedules. We have schedules, and we live by them. We've got roads that take us where we need to go. We got automobiles that go, you know, if I think, well, if I can go the speed limit, I can make it in this amount of time, and I got to get there. So we don't give ourselves a whole lot of extra time. Now, some of us arrive compulsively early, and some of us are compulsively late. But most of the time, we're on a journey from point A to point B. Jesus just got up and went to where the right thing was. And I think that's something we need to really get into our heart and into our mind. How important are we? We're not that important. If God puts something out in front of you that's more important than the thing you're going to, then do that thing. Do the right thing. Go meet the need. What was it about this centurion? Thinking about this guy, he really perceived the nature of God more clearly than a lot of people who were very good at all the religious minutia. You know, even the followers of Jesus, you know, they, you know, it's got to be this way, the temple's here, you do this, you do that. But the centurion had something in his mind. He was a very clear thinker. He had clear vision. His slave, number one, his slave was a precious person to him. Slavery wasn't the same thing in the ancient Roman world as it was in this country in more recent centuries. Slavery was a little bit more akin to employment, but it was just the way more than half the people in the Roman Empire would have been classified as slaves. But that you lived in the household of your employer, he took care of you, did what work you were trained to do or you were skilled at. And so he was precious to this centurion. The centurion also recognized that his own personal wealth and his own personal power meant virtually nothing to God. He knew that God wasn't impressed with that. And he knew that if God is doing this, if God is doing these healings, that Jesus has but to authorize it. He doesn't have to come and he doesn't have to touch. God owes me nothing, but he's able to do anything. And so, if he really is God, no need to come to my house, no need to put your hands on this servant. And you'll see this in other places in the Gospels. There's a man at one point who's blind, and Jesus asks him if he wants to see again. Well, yes I do. And it says that Jesus spit on the ground, which we're all going, ooh. And he made a little mud with the spit and the dirt, and he wiped it in the guy's eyes. Apparently, this was thought of as a way that people could possibly be healed in those days. And so Jesus met him where his faith was. He thought that if someone's ever going to heal me, it's going to take that. So Jesus isn't above that. He says, sure, I'll make a little mud paste for you. Whatever makes you see me more clearly, understand that this is actually God. God doesn't need the mud paste. God doesn't need to touch you to heal you. He doesn't need to do any of that stuff. He just needs to authorize it. And the centurion got that. He just understood that about God. And so this is it. God responds to our faith. And that doesn't mean if we don't have any faith, he stays home. It means if we don't, the less faith we have, the closer he'll come to us. And the more, you know, if we have a lot of faith, then he knows we don't need to have a lot of signs. We don't need to have a lot of extra stuff in our life. But if you trust him, a mustard seed worth, he'll be there. He'll do that for you. So do you have the, say the word, faith? Be okay? Do you trust him with that? God's funny that way. He knows that you know, Jesus, first of all, Jesus was amazed by the centurion. And so he knows that some of us just need something in our life. How does God get into our life? Well, he knows that we like babies, and so he sent one. That's what Christmas is all about. God coming into the world. And he comes in such a way that it's compelling. You know, on the face of it, it's like, well, what's just another baby, you know? They're noisy. They're messy. Somebody else's problem. Thank heaven. No. This is God himself coming into the world. He's not afraid to do that. He's not afraid to meet our weak faith. Do you need to look at this baby, at the baby Jesus, to believe? God says, okay, I'll meet you there. And so he does. He will meet us at our faith. So the woman who lost her son, what did she bring to Jesus? Did she bring an impressive faith? Not necessarily. We don't know that. Probably not really. But what did she have? She had a need. It wasn't just a want. This was more than just an inconvenience. She lost her only son, and she had already lost her husband. There's an Old Testament character that reminds us of that. Naomi lost her husband and her two sons and was stuck with the responsibility for her two daughters-in-law. She says, God has emptied me out. I don't have anything. And who begins to fill her up but her daughter-in-law, Ruth? She says, wherever you go, I'm with you. Whatever happens to you, I'm with you. And so God used that unlikely woman, that foreigner, that Moabite woman, to begin to fill her life back up. And so this woman really was in a place of need. Most of us, we don't experience a lot of need. We live in the realm of wants. I want this, I want that. I'd rather have this kind of kitchen counter. I'd rather have that kind of car. Boop, bitty, boop. And we call them, oh, I need to have that. But God knows what our needs are and what our wants are. So when you have needs, come to God. Now, the truth is, you and I really do have needs. We think we're wealthy, but he says, you're not so wealthy. You don't have what you need. When it comes to the real things that count in life, the relationships, relationship with God, are you wealthy? Do you know God? Do you know him because of his son, Jesus Christ? If you don't know Jesus, you don't know God. Let me just say that. That is the Bible's teaching very clearly. You need Jesus. If you want to be rich with God, you need to know his son. So this woman has brought her need. And the question for us is, you know, have we come to the place where we've just lost everything? Are you ready to say, Jesus, I need you? I got all the toys in the whole world, but my life is bankrupt. My relationships have crumbled. My other, you know, the important parts of my life are just vacuous. They're gone. If you bring your need to Jesus, he will have mercy on you. That is really, that's what he's asking us to do. You know, his heart goes out to that woman. And his heart goes out to you when you have a need. And, you know, in the time of need, we're thinking, where is God? It says his heart goes out to us. He tells this woman, he comforts her. Don't cry. Don't cry. God is with you. And so he did for her what only the closest family was really obligated to do. He came up to that funeral byre and he touched that container with that boy's body in it. He made himself unclean on her behalf, just like they were always afraid. They were always amazed that he would touch lepers. They were afraid that he would be made unclean, but he wasn't afraid of that at all. God cannot be made unclean. He makes things clean when he touches. And so that's exactly what he did for this woman, raising his son from the dead. And they got it. So now the public is beginning to look. This Jesus guy, he doesn't play by all of our rules. We can't make a box, really, that he fits in. And yet, he does the things of God. And so by doing this very thing, their mind went back to the story that was read earlier from the life of Elijah. And Elisha, the one who came after him, did the same thing. Raised a young person from the dead. And so they saw Jesus do this and they said, oh, a great prophet has come among us. They're beginning to see a connection between God and between Jesus. And so that's really it today. Come. Come with your trust, however big or however small it is. If you got big faith, he knows he doesn't have to show you too much. You trust him already. If you're just right on the edge, he'll come, he'll meet you. If you've lost everything, if you have great need, what else can you do? Open your arms, open your heart to the Lord. His heart will go out to you if you will bring your need to him. The more you trust, the more he'll be amazed. The more you bring your need, the more his heart goes out. We're going to gather around the Lord's table just now and share in this time together. And this is a picture of the heart of Jesus. Jesus, his heart went out. He gave his life. And this is the place where we come together. We take the bread of life together. We share in this cup together that represents the blood that he shed. So I'd like to ask now if Pastor Dave and the deacons would come and help us distribute these things, and we'll share in what the Lord has done for us.